we've heard that Acoms is a well-respected consulting firm, but what actually got you personally involved in environmental issues and motivated you to become an environmental consultant for Acoms?
I think I've always been passionate about the environment from an early age. I mean, living in the Southwest, we're quite fortunate to be really close to the sea and the moor, and always used to go out as a child, really, walking and exploring. And yeah, thoroughly enjoyed geography at school, and then that kind of propelled me into doing a geography degree. And then, yeah, I just kind of was looking for some kind of work in the environment sector, and I came across ACOM. And I knew that they were involved in environmental planning, but I knew that they also needed employees to demonstrate that they've got experience. So I went back and I retrained. I did a master's degree in environmental consultancy, and then that kind of led me to ACOM. Really, they had links with Plymouth University, and I was fortunate enough to be able to get a placement with them during my degree, and then off the back of that, they offered me a full-time job, so that's how I got into ACOM.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Elizabeth and I love Cornwall, and we want to see it become an even more environmentally healthy place. So how does ACOMS get involved in helping the community become greener?
So principally, I work with local authorities who are kind of preparing various plans of action for their area. So for Cornwall in particular, they are in the process of preparing a climate change development plan document. So I've been fortunate enough to be working on the sustainability appraisal for that plan. So essentially, they're looking to kind of allocate sites for renewable energy development. They're looking to safeguard areas for kind of flood protection. They're looking to implement development that kind of incorporates green infrastructure enhancements and various kind of sustainable design practices. So what we do is we look at what they're proposing, and we kind of look at the pros and cons of taking forward different strategies, and then we kind of use that to inform them on what approach would be best to take.
With the G7 summit just around the corner, we're wondering what you, as an environmental consultant, hope the summit will achieve?
I really hope that there's a big emphasis on the environment, really. I mean, if anything, COVID has kind of heightened how important open space and nature is, particularly for people to go and relax, you know, and escape. And I think historically, it's very easy to kind of talk about climate change and recognize what the impacts are, but then a lot more challenging to then kind of drive that through any kind of policy initiatives. And I've been quite encouraged recently because a lot of authorities across England have declared climate and biodiversity emergencies. They're kind of putting forward climate change action plans. And a lot of the groups that I work with, they have a strong kind of focus on those environmental and climate agendas. So I'm just hoping to see that recognised, really, and kind of, yeah, I think people need to be incentivized to start doing more. And it's very easy to kind of put forward kind of this overall plan of action, but more difficult to get that off on the ground.
Yeah. So do you believe, as of right now, the upcoming G7 summit, that the UK is actually doing enough to sustain a healthy environment? And if they're not, what issues do you think the UK should prioritize over others?
Great question. I think we've done a lot. I think we're at a point now where we've kind of set out the direction that we want to take. It's just about working out how best to do that. And I think it's all about encouraging people to kind of change what they do, really, and make those small changes to make a big impact. So for me, things like encouraging sustainable transport options, encouraging people to go out and plant trees and engage with nature, I think that's key. And at the moment, it's quite difficult to do that because, for example, I mean, the cost of driving to a location versus the cost of taking a train, often it's actually cheaper to drive because the cost of train tickets is so high. So if, for example, people were kind of encouraged to take the train, you know, and it was kind of made more accessible, I think people would quite easily transition over to that because they would understand the benefits. things like, in urban areas in particular, pedestrianising town centres, make them more walkable, you know, and create those kind of interconnected links of footpaths for people to actually want to walk into town, you know. And often if you create a good footpath and you've got trees planted next door, you kind of tick two birds with one stone, because you've encouraged people to walk and you've also planted trees, which are natural carbon sequesters, you know. So it's kind of working out those kind of joined up things that can make the maximum difference. I don't know whether I've answered your question there. I've waffled on.
No, it was very good. No, yeah, you have. Yeah. And then, of course, sort of most people, including me, are wanting businesses to be a lot more green as well. Do you work with them at all to sort of get them to become a lot greener and use more renewable energy and things?
Mm-hmm. I think a big part of my work, it's all about kind of encouraging authorities to take the most sustainable approach. And often it's quite difficult for authorities because they're up against competing kind of priorities. So the environment is just one facet. I mean, ultimately, they've got to deliver housing, they've got to deliver infrastructure for their population. So quite often it's quite difficult for them to balance the environmental side with the more social and economic side of things. I think internally, ACOM specifically are taking some positive actions. I mean, they've outlined a commitment to be more sustainable, particularly moving forward. We have a lot of office space which perhaps isn't in the most accessible locations, and what with the fact that we've been working from home for the past 12 months, I think there's kind of an acceptance now that we aren't necessarily going to need as much office space, so perhaps we can look to kind of downsize, relocate to a more kind of central location, which then encourages people to walk to work. So I think there's kind of a lot of things that are kind of emerging now, and almost in many respects, COVID has allowed us to kind of reset almost and have a real kind of good look and rethink about what we do moving forward.
So basically what you're saying is that COVID has helped us see that actually we don't need all these offices. It's much better to work at home because you've got much less travel and things.
I think it's forcing us to think differently. Whereas before, I think there was kind of a provisional acceptance that we could work from home. But now that we've had to, I think companies are waking up and starting to see, well, actually, people can be just as effective working from home as they can be in an office. And that's enabled them to perhaps think differently about how they operate.
The only thing about working from home is that sometimes the lines between work and home get a little bit blurred. I think you have to do a bit of a combination of both, of getting more central locations where you can walk to
and take a bus,
and taking buses or public transport where there are lots of people, instead of just completely working from home.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Yeah. It's easy to feel a bit disconnected from everybody when you're at home full time. So it's that whole kind of age old thing about what's sustainable and kind of meeting that balance. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, maybe even bigger workplaces like hospitals having hospital buses which go to areas potentially. That could be a solve, yes.